Welcome back to Deep Thoughts, ladies and gentlemen. On this brisk Saturday night or Sunday morning, however you want to look at it. It's about 12:30 a.m. I just got done editing episode 448. So it looks like we're going to get half the season done before the end of the year. How awesome is that, right? Okay. So this is going to sound like some... Potentially it might sound like some cheap little gimmick of an episode, but I assure you this is one that sort of pops in and out of my head in a serious way often enough that I'm now making an episode about it, because I'd love to have your thought process on this one. And it goes something like this: what gives us the impression that the world is any older than us? And more specifically than calling it the world, reality. Right? You know, if any of you have seen Dark City, the premise of Dark City is that a guy wakes up and he's in this sort of Gotham City. I don't know, it looks like it's in the 30s kind of. And, you know, he's kind of going about his daily business. I think he works for a newspaper or something. And then, you go to bed, you wake up, but he eventually wakes up in the middle of, either he wakes up or he doesn't go to sleep, and he starts to see something that's really disturbing. These trench coat guys with black hats are moving bodies around, and so they'll take someone out of a car and swap out someone's husband and then swap it around. Part of it's a Twilight Zone from back in the day, but... And then he finds Kiefer Sutherland, who's like this nutty, weird professor guy, and he learns that, wow, something's going on when we go to sleep. And then he realizes, man, you know, when's the last time it's ever been daylight? I mean, I kind of remember daylight, but never seen it. I can't remember having seen it, but I remember way back in my past, I got photographs of the daytime. But he asks his boss, who's William Hurt, like one of the best actors in the whole world, you know, when's the last time you remember it being daylight? Why are we at work in the middle of the night? And so I won't tell you the ending of it or anything like that, but you realize that his reality is way different than it looks, and that this whole thing is being orchestrated, that they're testing people in different positions. Now, the other side of it is the Philip K. Dick book that's called Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, which turned into Blade Runner, where replicants were given memory tracks, or memories. Memory tracks, it was the 60s term for it. And they think they're real. Rachel thought she was real, until Deckard tells her two stories about her childhood, where her brother and her played, I'll show you mine if you show me yours. He did his, and she chickened out and left. And then the second story was that she watched a spider build a web, and then when it laid a big egg in it, and then the egg hatched, and all the little spiders ate the mother. Very traumatizing for a little girl. And he says those are Terrell's nieces. And she had to resolve an issue later in the film where she remembers learning how to play the piano as a child. She didn't know she could play. So she gets on the piano while Deckard's taking a little nap, and she starts playing. And then he gets up and he says, I heard a piano. And she goes, man, well, I didn't know if I could play. I remember learning. So wouldn't it be interesting to think, just as a paradigm shift for your mind, to maybe see something you haven't seen before, that every day that you wake up might be the first and only day that you exist. That everything before that is just an illusion. I had a major deja vu tonight at the lounge. I was using my computer. I was scrolling a particular image on my computer, and then I was watching this weird movie with David Duchovny and Orlando Jones, who just so happens to be on the front of TMZ today for being let go from the show American Gods, which, wow, what a complete fuck-up that is. They're claiming he's not in the book. His character Nancy's not in the book, or Anansi, but he is the reason why I watched the show. I mean, I love the other characters. I love Ian McShane and Richie dude. But, wow. So anyway, it just got me thinking about this fabric of reality. You know, how many of you who have deja vu after seeing The Matrix in 1999 could never shake the whole idea of a glitch in The Matrix? And I'm literally driving home, and I mean, this was like probably 30 seconds of massive deja vu. Nothing predictive, but I did feel like people were going to come into the lounge, but that never happened. But yeah, our reality is based on our acceptance of what is. But now, think about ancient history as well. What's really fascinating about our world right now is that when you go back, well, Jesus, take the last 100 years and try to find out what history is, because it is so revised by the, I guess you could call them the Illuminati back in the day. Now they're called the Deep State and all their iterations in between. They have so lied about who's who, what's what, who's good, who's bad, what is good, what is bad, that we know that we're struggling just to figure out what the last 100 years really was all about. And then you eclipse 100 years and you're like, oh my God, what happened in the, you know, 19th century, 18th century, and then all the way back to these fabled existence of gods walking, you know, with us and doing all those, you know, crazy, wild miracles. And it's not just Jesus, it's a ton of them. And then, you know, it really gets super frayed when you get back to maybe the Babylonian time. Sanskrit and really having just loose artifacts from that time frame. We don't really go back that far. Every once in a while, we'll find a guy buried in the ice, and they carbon date the dude, and they think he's 5,000 years back, and then they'll find a mammoth elephant. Okay, that's still not much. And then we perceive ourselves as this really infant being on Earth. We really are. I mean, we're still allowing, you know, ridiculous douchebags to run the world, telling us that war is good for us, that killing babies at 9 months is good practice, you know. You don't have to believe in anything to think that shit's bullshit, right? So we live in this weird world. We have churches of Satan going up all over the world, and their mantra internally is to gain power from Satan, you have to sacrifice a human being, among other things. What? We have churches like the Vatican that have presided over more pedophilia cases revealed to the public than any other organization or individual in world history. But they are the proxy to God for a lot of people. This is our world. And so you look at it and you're kind of like, doesn't this really make any sense? I mean, does it really? And if it doesn't make sense, is this just an awakening being? Maybe it's just you. Maybe I don't exist. Maybe it's just me and you don't exist. I'm making you up. But it seems is almost like I feel like at times that my past or the history that I study, I should say, way before I was born, is sort of a silly, ridiculous story. I mean, think about this. They landed on the moon supposedly, was it July 20th? So I was born the next month, about a week and a half later after that, you know, a month and a week and like 45 days after, whatever. And so why does the moon mission look so stupid, but have a really idealistic approach? Because maybe as a child looking up at the moon, because that's one of my earliest memories as a baby, I couldn't speak. And they put me in this crib and my mom was pointing at the moon and goes, there's men up there right now. Which I don't know, that would have to be the next year, I guess. I gotta look up the other mission dates so I can memorize them. But maybe I invented that, and so I didn't cover all the details. I didn't cover, you know, maneuvers, and I just created this fantasy story. Right? I did an episode on the NPC thing, right? The non-player character thing, and there's two different thought processes with that. The NPCs that they're talking about in the mainstream conspiracy world are people that are just sort of Project Mockingbird individuals, right? They're told what to say and they say it, they don't care, and they repeat the same script on every single channel. Yeah, those people exist. Nothing really remarkable about that. My episode was about are some of these people even real? You know, what if we were put into a situation where we wanted to toughen ourselves up in a holodeck? What did Worf always do on Next Generation? He would go into the holodeck and program up a bunch of enemies and just take his Batliff, that was called, and just slaughter them all, right? Well, that was right in front of our face. Those aren't real people. They're characters. Now, we do a really bad impersonation of reality with video games today because we really don't have anything that's really like reality as much as virtual reality tries to do it. It's getting closer. It'll eventually get there. But the other ones that are very interesting are these theories that people tried to create, you know, conspiracy theories that the pyramids were built in the 1800s by the Masons to create God knows what history, you know. The idea that these things were built and then we can't build them again, it just seems, you know, like an oxymoron, right? But now let's say we go down this, and I don't want to take anyone on the edge of going completely insane and push them over the cliff on this subject matter. So just consider this an exercise in your mind of a, well, if we're at the Deep Thoughts Institute, and this prospect comes over the table at some interval where we consider new ideas, some weekly submission meeting that we have, everyone's invited. Maybe there's an app for that, right? We find out which one's the most popular one, and then we talk about it and whether or not we're going to start a new wing on the side of the college for it or dedicate some resources to it. How would we ever prove the age of the world? Because what they have done is created all these mechanisms that they tell us are ironclad methods of carbon dating things. Doing, you know, what is it, some of those, these radio waves and some of the different techniques. They're trying to create a whole new technique that can age the valence, age the patina on a rock, the oxidization of a rock. I mean, it's just, come on, seriously. But they'll tell us that these techniques are perfect, and then later someone goes, no, they're not. Why? Because that I's not dotted, that T isn't crossed, and this doesn't work. You know, 2 + 2 right there equaled 3 in their equation. This doesn't work. Oh, gosh, we're back to square one, right? So what if everything that we think, and what's really fucking hilarious for me, sorry for dropping the F-bomb so early in this one, but what really blows me away is when people will tell me with no friction in their mind of doubt that the universe is this old, the earth is that old, fucking humans are this old, everything's, you know, dinosaurs existed, da-da-da-da-da. Ugh. It sounds almost as ludicrous on the religious side where someone's like, nope, the world's 4,500 years old, that's it. Okay. But what gives us the perception of time anyway? We've talked about it several times on the show. I got whole episodes on it. But I always say, look, because we have this comparative memory, we believe that we have stored a previous state of the universe, our world, our sphere of observability, in a chain somewhere in some database, right? I don't give a crap if we want to talk about it being in the soul cloud of the universe or in just stored in our cells and our mind and our brain, excuse me. You know, doesn't matter. It's a chain link comparison. So what happens is we look back into the chain, which in our perception mechanism says, well, it can't get into the chain of history unless it happened. Whether it be we learned about a lie about history or we learned about something we believe to be true about history. You know, most of us don't have to reach outside of our own lives to completely understand the feeling of history. You remember being a child, most likely. You remember being a pre-adolescent, then an adult, then your 20s, your 30s, your 40s, your 50s, etc. You remember things that happened. In fact, a lot of folks remember those moments so well that they live in sort of sadness that they can't go back and relive those times instead of making something out of where they are right now. But, okay, let's draw a line. We're at this table that they're at our college, right? The Deep Thoughts University, and we know we have to draw a line somewhere. where the line has to begin at its best, right when we think we were born. Everything after that, our memory track in our mind is going to be full of events that we partially remember as we're really, really young, and then more vividly remember once we hit that threshold. Again, for me, I've got some memories. I got that crib memory where I didn't know how to speak. That was another weird one. I never talked back. I never said anything. I'm just looking, right? I was at my great-grandmother's house, and I was outside. It was where it's where they put babies, just outside in a crib outside. It's crazy. And I remember exactly where that house used to be because it was just down the street from the drive-thru. But then I remember being three and picking my favorite color and getting stung by a bee. I remember being four and realizing, Jesus, I hate being a kid. I want to be a grown-up. Let's get going. Not too much from five, not too much from six. Just a few weird kind of shadowy memories, riding my father's motorcycle. Then seven, it's on. As soon as I hit seven, I remembered everything within reason, right? Okay, that's my memory track of my life. Now, why do I think, well, I'll put it this way, how do I process history that's before me? Because one feels like a possession. One feels like an undeniable fact of my existence. And one is hearsay. It's hearsay. It's just like hearsay from a legal case. You don't really know, do you? Well, no. You heard it from somebody, right? Yeah. Okay, well, that's not admissible in court. It's hearsay. Damn. You know, well, did we go to the moon? Well, I heard we did. Even all the missions that happened up to 72, I didn't see any rockets launch. I didn't go to the moon myself. I've never talked to one of the astronauts. So I really, it's all just hearsay. Wasn't it interesting? Hearsay is not admissible in court, but hearsay is how we build up all of our perception of history. Let's do a little exercise and see if it leads to something. I have been taught that Franz Ferdinand was murdered, which resulted in a level of friction in Europe that resulted in World War I starting. As I've recently watched the documentary twice from two different sources, he drove by this area where I believe he was supposed to stop. These men ran out and threw grenades at him and tried to shoot him, but they missed, but they hit one of his buddies. He takes the car. He is a driver. And the car goes to the hotel, drops off his wife. He says, I got to go back for my friend. Surely those killers are gone. And he drives back. And some dude walks out of some pub or some whatever and shoots him in the head. Okay. Now, there's a whole bunch of that story that just sounds stupid as hell, right? That form of trying to kill him is absolutely ridiculous. Some rookie ambush on a world leader. Whatever happened just to walking up to the guy and shooting him? Right? Whatever happened to that? Have four or five guys just get within a foot of the dude. He is not going to live. You just pull it at waist level. Ta 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 ta. And he goes down because he's injured, and then the second guy finishes him off. Whatever happened to that? Have we never killed anybody before? An assassination? Surely we had, right? Even King Tut had a hole in his head, right? But now imagine, because that story sounds so weird, it seems to defy all logic. Of a man who's smart enough to become a world leader of any region of the world could have been made up. How many people believe that the Gulf of Tonkin events occurred to catalyze us into the Vietnam War? Well, as far as I know, at least 20 to 30 years, that story remained, and now it is debunked. It is a fake. None of those events occurred. You know, the Viet Cong Navy, you know, that should have just let everybody know. That doesn't make any sense, right? Land-based individuals who are basically living at least 100 years behind everybody else of the First World Order. They don't have jets. They don't have, like, you know, helicopters. They're just, you know, farmers trying to defend themselves. They had a scuffle with the French. The French do what they do, and they left, and then we went in there and got stuck in the war forever, you know? so much of our history is just a story. And that's the other part that's just mind-blowing. One of the most popular books in the world, if not the most popular book in the world, is the Christian Bible. I think most scholars who still find its value know that a ton of this is just allegory and story to teach us lessons. To say that an individual predicted someone to exist in the future. You know, what's interesting about the whole revelations. I was having this conversation with another guy at my lounge a few days ago. And I said to him, I said, you know, the most amazing thing about the Bible is the revelations prediction that we'll be in a one world currency. And it's easy to say that a long time ago and then make it happen as the bankers. The bankers could simply read Revelations and go, oh yeah, that is a great idea, and let's make it happen. But what blows my mind about that passage is that someone thought that was a threat when the Bible was actually, you know, translated out of all the hidden text into the King James Bible, which allowed it to be read by mortal men, right? That is a threat. A single world, one world currency, if we cannot get rid of world corruption and then put something in place to keep it from occurring again, that would be a really bad situation for mankind. Because whoever controls that money, just like the Rothschild said, controls the whole place. But now, how many boogeymen do we have from the past that are supposed to be real? And then how many boogeymen do we have written into lore that we sort of accept aren't real? You know, there's this sort of rebranding. Everyone's always trying to rebrand who are interested in vampires. They always try to rebrand vampires about every 20, 30 years, right? A new writer will come out. You know, Anne Rice did a brilliant job reimagining the vampire in a very fictional sense. But more recently, they're saying that the individuals that are part of these Churches of Satan and various other weird sects of similar incarnations, they're desire to drink human blood to stay young was re-metabolized up into the modern day vampire. Now, of course, they have this thing, we can't walk around during the day and you'll burn up if you get hit by the sun. That's probably more flowery constraints on the character. But, you know, it's a weird thing, you know, like there's people in royalty that always make it to 100 years. Always, always, always. So it's interesting. You know, we have stories of Bigfoots, werewolves. Was it the Cuba? We have to lean on hearsay and trust that is also based on almost an infinite amount of hearsay and trust for us to have any perception of the world. And of course, we have anthropologists and we have archaeologists that try to go out and find empirical evidence of things. And they might find some pottery, might find a shipwreck, might find a coin with a year on it. And so some of those things are profound in helping us out, right? And then you have the historian who's writing it all down and trying to connect as many dots as possible to reconstruct the history of the world. But there are these weird events in history that are sort of unexplained. You know, the burning of the Alexander Library. You know, it's like there's always someone who's smart in the world, who's in charge. The idea that you would burn down a library with pretty much the pinnacle of man's knowledge at the time seems completely impossible to believe. You would want to put people in the library, evaluate what is duplicitous with what you already know in other areas of the world, find out things that are perhaps the anti-dogma, anti-propaganda against your propaganda, earmark those to be burned. But if there's any sort of mathematical, philosophical, scientific, medical, any knowledge that you don't have, there is no way on planet Earth you would let that text be burned. It might be the difference between your own life and your own death if you simply knew that crushing this flower and putting it in a tea and drinking it would save your life? You wouldn't just get rid of it. But we love those epic moments in time, those breathtaking crescendos to a story, don't we? The Bible's full of them. The Bible's made of them. Every time a miracle happens, you're talking about a massive turn in a script. It captivates your mind, cures leprosy, cures some sort of seizure that's going on, brings a guy back from the dead, brings himself back from the dead, ascends to heaven. All these things, which have been told several times, are the miracles, are those things that we're supposed to believe. We're literally supposed to believe in fiction to construct some form of engaging prowess for our own lives. I don't think it works like that. I asked this gentleman the other day, who I respect greatly, but I said, what about all the other religions before Christ that have the exact same virgin birth? Some of them have the exact same stories where at 13 he's talking to all the religious authorities of the time and he's being tested for all of his knowledge and the dude disappears until he's 30 and then, you know, this whole thing, he gets killed for his beliefs or claims of who he is and then he ascends to the stars or to the sun or what have you. And the guy said the cliche, the massive, massive cliche, which is, well, you know what I think is that those are all put there by Satan to throw us off the path of Jesus Christ. So he puts them before Christ ever existed, so that when Christ does exist, you won't believe in it anymore. Really? Because every single time, in the 27 times before Christ, that this happened, and there's debates of how many of stories there are, but my last count was 27. Everyone believed 27 times. So the idea that Satan is putting it into the mix to make man deceived so he won't believe in Jesus Christ, well, you know, if this Satan guy exists who's an angel, you know, there's all kinds of problems with that whole theory that something that's perfect could make a mistake, and then angels aren't perfect, and whatever, all that stuff. It didn't work. Because when Jesus came around, well, it's the dominant religion that controls what year we're on. You can ask a Muslim, what year is it? And they have to tell you a Christian date in history. They're going to tell you how many years it's been since Jesus died. Isn't that wild? You're a Buddhist. What year is it? Huh? Oh, it's that many years since Jesus died. It's like it dominated the whole planet. Okay? And I know there's, I guess, some places on Earth that use a different calendar. Whatever. Never seen it before. I mean, I've never seen an email come in from Stardate 2392.15 Mark 9. Mm-mm. You want to earn money with banks in Europe? You better figure out what year it is, right? But think about the huge insult. And I'm not trying to get anyone offended or anything or jump on that whole bandwagon. But it's such a gigantic insult from a Christian to every other religion on planet Earth that says, I have created a demon called Satan, which a lot of religions don't have, right? I've created Set or whatever it is, right? And my devil, of which only exists recently in my weird little version of fake history, made your religion, which makes you, in my eyes, a disciple of Satan. Because you believed in an exact replica of my God, who, in again, many cases, did everything first, like thousands of years before Christ, like 4500 BC, we have Tammuz, Ishtar / Queen Semiramis, and Nimrod that did all the same stuff Jesus did, right? But there's local Satan projected into the past. Wow. What about the Native Americans that don't have anything like this? Like I always say, theirs is silly and yours is totally true. I mean, at that level, you should just go, wow, I got to meet God someday if I believe in God. And what am I going to do about this whole thing? See, God, I loved you more because I hated most of the people that ever existed. But now think about this. The reason why I mention the religious layer to this is that it's sort of one of these things of, our reality is supposedly going back to an infinity, and then we have this problem where we have this Big Bang theory, or we have the is theory, right? Something from nothing is pretty ludicrous. So if you have something from something, it never ever starts and it never ever ends. It just is. But now, let me ask you this. When's the last time you had a really good dream? Very, very detailed dream. And you worried for 1 second about how the universe started inside your dream. Now, I have dreams that are different realities, man. Like, I go to sleep and I am like I say a million times, I'm Jean-Luc Picard going to this other planet with my whole set of family and friends, some of them from this world sometimes, but most of the time not. Although lately it's been my family. It's really strange. But I have to wake up and shake off that reality. I have to go, this isn't real. Like that, or that one, I don't really say it's not real. I just say, look, I got to engage in this reality today. So get your ass up, take a shower and get some work done. It's interesting. But we don't worry about the dream world being real, but we still live it. For those of you who have very vivid dreams, well, think about it. What do you not get out of a dream that you get in this reality? I think in this reality, we have pain and suffering. And even in our dreams, maybe you have a nightmare. Maybe you get a little spooked out every once in a while. But overall, hopefully you're having just normal dreams with good dream people, and you're engaging some, you know, some real free-flowing reality, which is sort of your soul's world. You know, I always think it's like the day that I die, if I can just die in my bed, and especially if I'm already asleep, that'd be the best thing, right? So I'm having this massive dream, right? And it's got that dream quality, right? It doesn't have all the instrumentalities, doesn't have all the senses. And then, oop, my body dies. And now my soul goes, all right, 100% engagement. And now the video game that is my dream all of a sudden goes into massive reality, right? It is like, yeah, I can feel things. My arms finally grow and I can use my fingers. And I learn, you know, maybe the dream people go, welcome. Can you imagine that? You know, your dream people go, they all just kind of look at you funny when you die in the real world. And they're like, what do you want to do? Because you can do anything. And your relatives show up. Elvis shows up, whatever. A good friend of mine, I won't say his name because I don't want him to get pinned down on this later on, but he sent me a text and he goes, man, it was when we had that big full moon, I believe on the 12th of December, and he lives in a really nice area where you can get a really good view of it without a lot of light pollution, and he's looking at the moon, and he's sending me a text, and he's a pretty normal believer when it comes especially to heliocentric globe, Earth, and space, and all that kind of stuff. He's just a very normal guy in that sense. And he sends me a text and he goes, I'm looking at the moon. He's a very serious dude, very brilliant. And he goes, I'm starting to have a hard time believing that it's that far away. And I thought, oh, wow, that's interesting. And of course, for me, with knowing all of you, I'm thinking flat earth right off the bat. You know, I'm thinking Ed Harris up in that thing and it's the observatory. You know, there's all kinds of theories about what the moon is, whether it's a, David Icke thinks it's a mothership, and it's just literally a Death Star without the death ray. It's got a full blown interior and what have you. Even though Neil Adams will prove to you, it's a very organic thing. But I think that what's fascinating about the movie The Matrix is that it leaves us with several, and someone asked me, by the way, to do a whole review of Matrix. I will do that. I need to rewatch it. I've seen it several times, but I really need to rewatch it to make sure I've got a bunch of great things to discuss about it. But think about it. It really showed us this amazing, vivid virtual reality world that Neo started in. Then it shows us this sort of brutal world that he gets pulled out into. The whole story about us being batteries for electronics is phenomenally amazing because it reversed the metaphor of us using, you know, acid batteries to give our machines power. And then all of a sudden we become the batteries. But the other one is that the glitch in the Matrix, when the cat walks by twice, that's phenomenal. The idea that people in the virtual world could be taken over by, Mr. Smith or whatever it is. I think for me as well, you know, what's really difficult for me personally to accept sometimes, and I'm sure it's hits a lot of you, is because you grew up with your intelligence and your ability to discern facts to the best of your ability. It doesn't mean none of us are 100% correct with trying to figure out what's true and what's false, what's a maybe or whatever. But when you look at the world and you see the billions of sheep on this planet, billions of people that do not understand you can see their virtual reality. When you look at China, you can see their virtual reality of communism. And it's funny because I grew up with that in my mind for Russia without any internet to see what Russia was really like. So the lies piled up and piled up. And now with Russia pulling out of communism, going full capitalism, and then dealing with, you know, car wrecks that are insane because they just recently really got into everyone having one, but they don't grow up with the genetic code to drive one. It's interesting. But when you see this, you kind of wonder, like, how is this world so upside down from our perspective? It's so easy to find out what is good and what is bad. And so why is it so easy for something to be stolen? You know, someone was telling me they lost their wallet the other day and it got stolen. And so that's where I always come up with my take, which is, isn't it fascinating that in almost every single case, I have no idea what the odds are, but it seems like more than 9 out of 10, it almost seems like 99 out of 100, when you leave your phone behind, when you leave your wallet behind, something that's very universal, meaning everybody could use it. If you leave your glasses behind in their prescription, someone's going to go, oh, this is great. I'm about to puke. And they lay them back down or give them in as lost and found. And all of a sudden they grow some morals. But isn't it fascinating that almost everyone's a thief? And my buddy was like, yeah, everyone's just a closet klepto. They're a closet jerk-offs that steal stuff. Everyone is a shithead, I think is what he said. And it's like, I hate to have him take that tack because it's a sad way to look at the world. I mean, again, if you are dictating it all, this reality, then that's the reality you're dictating for yourself, and that's the frequency you were going to, which is, I am a good person living in a world of douchebags. Me believing that I live in a world of sheep. Maybe that's not a good way to view things. And there's an interesting thing about reality, depending on your childhood, because, you know, if I told you, look, when I was a kid, you know, not everything went right. My parents got divorced and, you know, I had some asshole friends, you know, they were always wanting to fight all the time. And, you know, so I've been through my standard issue bullshit as a kid. And, you know, plenty of inner city kids had worlds, you know, that were 1,000 times more acidic than mine. But I had, like, the standard American apple pie sort of journey, in my opinion. I traveled way. I've been to 10 different homes before I graduated high school, and I've been to 15 different homes since I've been to California, so 25 different locations. That's a lot of moving. But I came to California a super idealistic kid. Now, I want you to just think about this in a sense of reality. I'm not just trying to tell you my history here. My reality was that I was coming to a place that I was in love with. And it was just falling uphill. I mean, I worked my ass off and I was smart, and I was a good person. I didn't, you know, backstab anyone, didn't steal from anyone or anything like that. So I had just this blissful life up until I had chosen personally to follow a girlfriend to Silicon Valley. I was leaving the area that I loved to go to an area that I didn't know and I didn't want to live there. And I think in my thought process, I thought, well, we'll just do this for a little while and then we'll come back down south. Nope. Didn't come down for 12 years. Now, it was very difficult for me to find things in the Bay Area that I liked. So I found Apple. I got a chance to work with some legends and got back into the game business full time, having started down here in Southern California. But in my perception, once I bought into the acidity of the world, which I've now sold all that shit, getting back in the total positive realm of the planet, you know, 9/11 happens eventually, and it's just like, we can't be happy anymore in the world. It's all terrorism, it's all blah, 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 it's just all sticky and gross, and we're looking over our shoulders, and going through an airport now is like my version of the Fourth Reich, you know, controlling human beings. I can't drive down the street sometimes without seeing a, you know, drunk driving stop where it's taking 99.9% of the people that don't have any alcohol in their system having to stop and show their papers. Yeah, I don't support that at all. So I found myself almost dialing into a universe, maybe through the law of attraction, that seemed to mold around my perception of reality, that opportunities seemed to change. And then once I started my game company, it all went back the other way. But still, as I started to wake up in 05 and then really get into the economics of waking up by 07, 08, I think my mind, this is what I just suspect if I'm having any control over reality, it's creating the 2008 crash. Because I got all into this super negativity. And then what happens? It manifests into this crescendo moment where I'm going to crash the economy, the world says, and you're going to pay for it eventually. It's weird. Here's what I have not experienced. My life is fantastic, and it stays fantastic, but the rest of the world is in super hardship. That has never happened to me. If the world goes down the tubes, and, you know, for me, it's really the United States of America, but, you know, these recessions have been global, so I'll just say the world for this last 20 years. But when that stuff happens, I get sucked into it. I'm not high enough in the food chain in my own mind to stay out of that shit. Always been a victim of it. What was interesting when I was a kid, you know, there was living in the Midwest in a tiny town. There's not a lot of jobs for people. Plenty of jobs for me as a teenager. But I remember my dad struggling to find the, you know, the proper job with the proper pay, just because you have very few choices in a town with 10,000 people. You can work in that one thing over there, that one thing over there. Some of this takes trade skills that you may not have, and we can find someone for cheaper with a bunch of trade skills instead of you. So we're not going to train you because we can get someone else. So there were times when we were broke as shit. I mean, unbelievably broke. But because I had what I needed, especially I had, you know, a loving family and a bunch of good friends, I didn't pay attention to it. I don't think I suffered for it at all. I think it actually made me more lucid to the world. And then when it came time for me to do it by myself, hey, if I was broke, I knew how to be happy when I was broke. When I had money, I really didn't know how to save it. And I ended up spending a lot of it. Spent on some good stuff, but still, you know, there was a lot I needed to learn about that whole thing. But think about the dinosaur thing. You know, the more I look at it, the more I can't accept it. And part of it has to do with the sheer physics of these beings. You know, Brontosaurus being so utterly massive, it would have to eat through the tiniest head aperture as they've faked its design. I don't know if the mouth is big enough and chews enough to store food to be alive. The Tyrannosaurus Rex, whose physics is completely ridiculous. I don't believe it. The pterodactyl, I don't think it could fly. I don't. They just took a bat and slimmed it down, you know. So we have these things that are virtual in our world today. We have organized religion, which is very virtual, you know. And let's say you're a Christian. You're like, oh, man, my dude's real. Everyone else's is fake. Okay, great. So to my point, you've proved it. You believe everyone else's fairy tales of their gods and their miracles and all that other folktale stuff is 100% fake, and it just feels 100% fake immediately. But yours, which is more profoundly outrageous than any of the ones that came before, it's real. Isn't that strange? So, you know, no matter which religion you choose to believe, there are hundreds of religions that came before the one that you picked that you don't believe in, that you think, ha ha ha, look how stupid those people are, believing that Ra walked the earth with a hawk's head, and those Native Americans that think that your soul turns into a star, and those Buddhists, well, God, what do they do? They're all stupid. You're brilliant. Maybe that's some brain fuckery that will keep us from really ascending to the next level. Just saying. I got a buddy who says that all the time. Just saying. It's so funny. So we're at this university. We've parsed a little bit of this. We've talked about our own personal perceptions of history and maybe picked out some doozies. Dinosaurs and religion, pretty good. And then we go, okay, what would we hope to find in our experiment of reality? Because the idea would be to prove that history happened the way that it happened. So what do? In this world, we overlap generations. Someone was at Dallas, Texas in 63 when, was it November 26th or something like that, when Kennedy's assassinated. People saw that happen live, who lived, who weren't killed by the intelligence agencies who participated in the whole thing. And so they go into the kitchen, they go to, I don't know, billiard clubs or whatever, Elks Lodges, or they go to the Tupperware parties or whatever, and they say, oh my God, I saw it. I saw his head blow up. And so their memory track is transposed onto your memory track. And so we have this organic sort of memory track of human consciousness. Well, now let me throw a little wild card in here. I used to talk about this a lot in season 1 and 2, and it's called the 100 monkey experiment, or the 10 monkey experiment. It's actually done with 100. And they took all these monkeys, and they're in this environment, and they have them all labeled, and they know who's who and where they hang out. And they took a monkey out of that bunch, and they brought it into this room, cage, and create a little machine that if it tapped and pulled on something, a little pellet would come out. But they had to do it in a particular method. And they couldn't leave until they did. And the story goes is that the first one took 2 weeks. And then they put that one back in the bunch after it figured out how to do it. Then they observe very meticulously which monkeys that monkey gets in contact with and what he does when he gets in contact with the monkeys. And they pick out one that never walked to his side of the room, put him in the cage. I don't know what the interval was when they did the second one. They can give it some time. But then the second one does it around half the time. Then they put it back in. They run the experiment again, pull out one that the first two didn't get, have any contact with, and now it does it in just a few days. And then it got to the point where no matter which monkey you pulled in there, they all did it instantaneously, proving not the method, but proving that we transmit knowledge to each other without speaking. Just keep that in your mind. That has been done, from what I understand, multiple times. I've had someone totally school me on that experiment who I'd never thought would believe in anything like that. And I thought, whoa, that's cool. You actually just told me all about it and you added all the details. But now take the memory track concept. What if, in having physical proximity to another human being without knowing them, if you know them, it's even better. And let's say that you're like, man, I never asked my grandmother all the questions I wanted to ask her, or my grandmother, or whatever. But you spent thousands of hours in his or her presence. You may actually have, one, their immediate trade skills, but you might have their beliefs, because you have their rationales for why they believe in things. But you also might have all of the memory tracks, memory track data they have in some reserve, not easily accessible area of your mind. And who knows if it goes all the way back to the soul. Obviously, the universe would know everything. That's one of the big key premises of Altered States, the movie, which everybody needs to see. So if that were the case, in any way, shape, or form, let's say you had the database, let's say you had three database tables, similar design. Your first database table is your immediate, what happened today, what's happening last 5 minutes, your short-term memory database. But then you have your long-term memory database, very easily accessible, but it has pretty much everything that you've ever done in your lifetime, minus the fact that perhaps when you were really young and psychic as a child, you didn't write into the database the same way as when you became sentient. There's got to be a reason why when I was 7, the light switch just turned on and every day was memorable. It's strange. And then why do I have these couple memories where I was at my daycare center? That's why I remember 3 and 4 really well. One, I didn't want to be at the daycare center when they did all this stupid kid stuff. And then two, someone pinning me down about my favorite color. I remember being on a swing set thinking, I always thought about my age. That was the weird thing too. I was on the swing set and they were like, well, what's your favorite color? And I was just like, purple, you know. And it was only because someone had recently taught me that red and blue mixed together makes purple. I thought that was cool. It's not because of Prince or anything. But your third database could be the one that is written, that is in some super reserved system. That is your elders. Could perhaps the universe itself writes it in there. Perhaps you're born with a pre-existing memory check. Perhaps that one's more the soul database, and the other two are the mind database, the brain working with the consciousness / the soul to create some sort of track that you need to live. You got to learn how to do things, right? Pull up your pants, brush your hair, brush your teeth. Now, why talk about three different databases with different levels of access? Obviously, that third one is at best an instinctual reference database. You throw the query in there. For any of you who do programming, you write a query, you put it in your first two databases, boom, you get it back pretty good. Except the mundane gets erased, right? What'd you have for lunch? Oh, God, I don't know. Chick-fil-A. The third database gets the same query, but what it returns back is not vivid, necessarily, previous memories. What you get back is a set of symbols. Some sort of instinctual... That sounds like a bad idea. Well, you should do that. That sounds fantastic. Remember when Freud broke the mind down into the ego, the character, and the persona? Now, again, lots of people say that today that's been hugely deprecated. I don't think it should be. The ego is the one that's the big question. But there definitely is the character and the persona. Small refresher course. The persona is who you pretend to be to your friends and people you don't really know that well. Your character is who you really are. Regardless of what you put on to the outside world, it has your frailties, your strengths, whatever you really are is your character. Now, the ego was this idea that you have some internal, consciousness that is your sort of your primal, instinctual, they always talk about it as your fearful self, which I think is a horrible way of describing that because that means everyone's afraid in the inside. We just have self-preservation algorithms that are very binary. It's either this way or that way. There's no other way. You want to get out of the way of a lion coming at you, your internals, your super, super internal turns on, wipes the character and the persona because who gives a shit? And it's run, 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 or grab something sharp and hope for the best, right? But here's what's brilliant about what he did. He took the intangible mind and he made it tangible through paradigm. He gave us some references. Well, I think before Freud, everyone knew about people pretending to be certain people and really being something different. That's something you kind of just all figure out as you get old. You could never have studied Freud and you'll figure out those two things. But isn't it interesting that if we were just to overlay what I just gave you. You have short-term is your persona, your long-term is your character, and your intangible database is your ego. The ego is just as intangible in Freud's world as what I just gave you in this reality debate store. Now let me throw this at you. If we were to accept the fact that perhaps some of this is a matrix, maybe we do truly exist for as many years as we think, but we don't exactly know the start date. The start date is said to go back, depending on what philosophy you're looking at, hundreds of thousands of years, millions of years, or just 4,500 years back. Okay, it's a paradigm. You figure out what you want. You're here now. I think I'm here now. I think you're here. And so we got to work with what's in the now. But what if, you know, somebody came up to you that you would believe, or you have a dream where you get this information? Maybe you take an acid trip and get the information. Who knows? And they lay on you this idea. They go, well, but maybe let's just say it's a dream person. Because dream people don't really engage you that much like reality, right? Because they don't in my world. I mean, they do and they don't, right? You don't sit down and have a conversation like this in your dream. At least I have never had a deep conversation in my dream. But I have had dream people say some pretty weird crap sometimes. But what if you're in your dream and they say to you, look, you're thinking about waking up, aren't you? And you're like, oh, well, I guess I am. And they say, you know, your world is just as malleable as this one. And you're like, what are you talking about? And they say, well, you think your name is this. You think your gender is that. You think your job is this. You think you can do this and you can't do that. And you know what the secret is? You're not really that person at all. You're just accepting the fact that you're that person. You've chosen a virtual reality configuration as your reality. You've accepted the paradigms of all the restrictions because, well, you guys kind of tell each other that that's what you can and can't do. It's always that thing. You're 5'1", you want to be 6'1"? Just make yourself 6'1". Just wake up and say, I'm going to wake up into a 6'1" version of myself. You are a male, but you feel like you're a female. Well, just wake up a female. Make your body however you want. You're in total control of that reality, just like you're in control of this one. Have you ever realized the fact that they both look photoreal? Well, if this one's fake, then how do you have all this rendering capability? How do you have all this 3D modeling capability? How are you casting light perfectly in this room if this is fake and that one's real? They both look the same. This one's a lot better because you can do a lot more cool stuff. We can have spaceships and aliens and we can have fun with this one. This is like a video game. This is where you actually are who you are. Is who you are in your dreams. But in reality, they create a 9/11, or you allow them to, or you let your life get really negative to the point you manifest your own crescendo of some bad event. And then you feed into it. You don't have to. Those of us who grew up in the 70s and 80s, at least, those of you who go back even further, you have a more profound version of this truth I'm about to say. When you get into the 90s, I'm going to say this until the day I die, it was a negative fucking decade, man. It was negative, grungy-ass music. And the music is good, okay? But it's all at the expense of dressing nice. Gangster rap. Oh my God. I mean, this was like kill people, do as much drugs as you possibly can, and repeat. And every version of music was doing this. If you had a positive classic rap, you were out of the game. If you had anything positive in rock and roll, you're out of the game. Look at Guns N' Roses. Guns N' Roses, which is an amazing band. My God, listen to Welcome to the Jungle. I mean, think about it, man. That was the whole thing about coming to Los Angeles and how this thing will eat your soul if you don't pay attention. So what ends up happening? 10 years later, 11 years later, after all this negativity starts just splattering all over the world as a trend, we get the amalgamation moment of all that negativity. You know, again, men had to get really hard. That was the big thing. You couldn't be nice anymore. Again, If you want an example of this, like I always say, go back and watch Soul Train. But you watch these people dance, do disco, go watch all those old movies. Hell, just watch movies in the 80s. Look how silly we were. And now all of a sudden, boy, have you ever acted like that again? You're a pussy, you know, whatever. That's an example of us controlling our reality to infect everyone in the world with this weirdness. You know, and now since we've been at war for, I don't know, 18 years until Trump kind of shut it all down for us, it's going to take us another decade to get out of it. You know, and there was the one saving grace that I can't even believe this occurred, other than soldiers were still very scarred from it, was when we ended Vietnam by 1975. We were so ready to be out of that negativity that Hollywood blew up and gave us just the most idealistic visions of the world. You know, E.T. is in that community, Poltergeist is in that community, you know, just all these, you know, go do Star Wars, Star Trek, do all these things and have this fun time enjoying it. And even the later part of the 80s, you still have amazing movies, Die Hard, Total Recall, I guess Terminator was 85. There's just tons of good stuff. We craft our reality no matter what. But how old is this one? There's probably two answers. There's the answer that we don't really know, which is the incarnation of man as we perceive ourselves to be. And then there's the answer we probably know, which is everything else that really makes this place occur. Right, the universe, as we like to say. Even if we're in a little bubble that's our universe and there's another bubble with another universe, it's still considered the whole mechanism of the whole thing. That's probably infinitely old. It's a really strange thing for a man, meaning mankind, to think about something that is infinite. Right? We've talked about it several times on the show. But now, just, you know, give yourself some thought over the next, I don't know, month or so. And, you know, it's like when you're contemplating Flat Earth, for instance, and you're brand new to the theory, and, you know, you're totally heliocentric. You were raised by NASA and in science classes and books, and you're really skilled in that knowledge. But for a second, you just kind of think about the world being flat, and you think about maybe this place isn't spinning, and maybe that moon is only 3,200 miles up, and the sun's only 3,200 miles, and all, you give it a chance in your brain for a split second, and as long as you're not, I think, all I can say is as long as you're mentally balanced, you can have that experience, and come back to your theory of round earth, or whatever, globe earth, and you enjoyed it, you enjoyed the little possibility that it could have been flat. Well, do that for the notion that maybe this is sort of a dark city, except we have light. We have a daytime and a nighttime. But then when we go to sleep, it's a little bit different. The interesting thing about dark city, on a technical level, and this is no criticism of the movie whatsoever, or I think it was a book before that, would be not everyone goes to sleep in a society at the same time. There's always someone who's suffering from some sort of insomnia, someone who works a late shift, someone who prefers to work at night. And so that little game that they were playing in the movie would have to rely on the fact that everyone has been put to sleep at a particular time. Because I think in one of the scenarios, there's still a car. Yeah, that's what happened. That's right. Because the cars were still moving downtown, and it just, everybody went, and the cars would slow down, not hit each other. I was going to sleep the other day, and I'm laying on my pillow, and it's one of those situations where you have your eyes closed, but you're still seeing some sort of reality, and it's now way bigger than the world that you're in. It's sort of, the ceiling doesn't exist, and for the very first time, I'm looking up, and I see sort of this fractal tree, you know, like you see those 3D fractals, or they fly around them, and they're kind of like wild organic, you know, black and white stripes or whatever it is, right? This didn't really have much of a color, but it felt like four prongs coming down, two towards the top of my, or I guess the top over my eye sockets, and then two below my eye sockets on my cheekbones. And all I could feel was this programming feeling, right? It was like, here's your update. And just hold still while this update comes down on you. And I just sat there and it was like, it was kind of soothing, but it also felt like a physical pressure on my face, even though my face had nothing touching it. And so I thought, you know, that's been one of my thought processes with a reality. If I were to design this reality, you would be uploading different programs to various people because they're in a particular position to engage certain opportunities. You have a certain level of knowledge. You wouldn't want, again, anyone to be in a stagnant circle unless they're serving a purpose with that stagnant circle. And that happens, right? You're a good parent to your kids. Well, you might be in a bit of a static circle when you're raising your children because that's just what you're supposed to do. Maybe you have a family business, you're self-employed, and you just love it. You know, it's just you go in that circle. But every day has the nuances that you pay attention to that makes anything but trivial for your life. You know, your kids grow up. That's the beautiful thing. It's the difference between pets and kids. These people who replace their kids with pets, man, are you losing out? No, I love pets. Trust me, I love pets. But have both of them, right? Because your pets kind of gets a little smarter over time, right? They're definitely lovey, is crazy, hopefully. But your kid, my God, they'll take you on the biggest roller coaster ride of your life. You'll laugh, you'll cry, but they get better, right? They draw scribbles on the piece of paper and go, that's you, mommy. You know, and then later on, it's a potato head with four little legs off of it. That's you, daddy. And then eventually start drawing bodies and cars and they start doing really cool things. And then they start having these deep thought conversations with you. And man, you know, just seeing your own DNA talk to you really smart, it's probably one of the most amazing things you can experience. But I'd be interested in your thoughts, man. You know, what do you ever... Well, I'll put it this way. I know a lot of you question reality as is, just because you're curious. And, you know, what I want to do is make sure that you folks don't, that you don't get scared or mad at other concepts of reality within yourself. Forget what anyone else thinks, but just have fun, like experiment. You know, when people, I read these articles where some scientist again says, well, I think we could totally be in a computer memory bank because we have, there's signs of binary zeros and ones everywhere. And it's like, okay, all right. Hey, I totally respect that. That's great. Once you can start bringing that into a physical model that we can really start to use as a potential medium to change the universe, right? I always go back to that, the movie Time Bandits, where you have a perception of reality, it's locked, but these bandits have the map they stole from God, which shows them these doors where it's sort of the back door in the software that allows you to jump from the 20th century back to the 18th century, you know, to steal things from Napoleon and then jump back to the 24th century to steal a spaceship, you know. I think that's great. It sort of breaks your mind open to kind of go, wow, you know, how much do we subscribe to paradigm restrictions in this reality? I don't think any of us can count that high. You know, and just to put another fine point on that, you've heard me assert this in different episodes for different contexts, but in this particular context, we all know people that believe that they're never going to succeed, people that they're never going to get the person of their dreams, they're never going to this, never going to that. And the weird thing is they don't. But you live in a very similar world. I mean, for some of you that got to grow up in the same school, in the same town, your whole life, God bless you, you will have a classmate that is the same gender as you, the same height as you, the same athletic build that you have, went to all the same classes, seemed to do pretty good in school, maybe even got slightly better grades. But they have this negative Nancy, this Debbie Downer thing about them. And you, who maybe even struggled more, maybe that's why you're more intelligent, who knows, but you go off and get all of your dreams simply because in your mind you were like, I'm going to get these dreams. This is just what I'm going to do with my life. There is no other choice. But your friends over there going, I can't go anywhere. Oh my God, I got this and that. All these excuses. How much of the world do we control? I mean, even outside of a matrix computer, blah, 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 just our attitudes towards life changes everything. I know this is supposed to be an episode about how old the reality is, but I just have a really bizarre view when I look back at the hearsay history that I'm supposed to believe about every region of the world, who was the boss, who was not the boss, who was a slave of who, you know, all these stories. The fact that the fact that we have these completely made up characters that science tries to prove, it just blows my mind. You know, the big flood of Noah. Come on, people. Come on. You know, in one sense, you have the Ice Age that's supposed to take responsibility for all this. And then you have, you know, Noah. And they say, well, there definitely was a flood event because we can see it in the, you know, maybe what you think is water damage is not water damage at all, but maybe it is. Who cares? Maybe that region got flooded out. And so, you know, there's a bunch of storms. There's a few El Nino years in a row. And so you find massive flooding in Egypt and some massive flooding in England, maybe some massive flooding in the plains of North America. And then you're like, oh my God, it's so conclusive. The whole world must have flooded. Overlooking all of the other theories that could make that kind of thing happen. And so I'm not sure, because I was going to do an episode that was sort of like this one, but I think this one's better, which was essentially how far back could we go with standard history where it just starts to become bullshit. You know, we simply can't rely on anything past a particular year. And my sort of studying history and knowing some of my friends that supposedly have their family trees back to the 1500s, it's around that time for me, the 1500s. Now, we know, supposedly, okay, I should say no in flying quotes, that, you know, Rome existed way before 1500s, and we have these Colosseums and these giant Parthenons in Greece, and then we have pyramids, and then we have the rebuilt Stonehenge in 54, with rocks that are obviously much older than 1954. But when you see Stonehenge rebuilt in 54, and then they tell you to this day that's exactly where it was found, when it's not where it was found, there's 110 photographs of them building the thing with everyone there watching, like the public was invited to see it be built. And then to have that cast in this time frame as really being there. I mean, it was down the street, it was all collapsed for the most part, there's like one T-joint thing going on. Doesn't that just shake up your entire world? That you could go to any university and go into a history professor? I mean, any of you who are still in school, do this. This is hilarious. Get the video on YouTube. Just look up, you know, Stonehenge hoax 1954. There's a great one up there with this Navajo music. It's just this beautiful, just beating drum thing. And they show you the 110 photographs. It's just beautifully collaged together. It doesn't need to be any better than that video. Because get that on your phone. Maybe even screen capture a little bit of it. If you really want to get fancy with it, print a few of those pictures out with all those people standing around. And then go ask your history professor, when was Stonehenge built? Maybe do it in front of the class. Wouldn't that be awesome? Just, you know, for a second here. Can I get your attention? I want to have your permission. Don't want to piss you off. Can I ask you this question? When do you think Stonehenge was built? And he's going to say 5,000 years ago. He's going to say it was built by druids and all this fucking bullshit, right? And then you can just bring up that picture, bring up your iPad, whatever. Better if it's a picture because you could pass them around, right? And say, well, I have 110 photographs that prove that this was restored from a previous location in 1954 on a completely new plot of land that did have a ring in the ground from some previous thing, but had no stones. But the one you visit in England right now was reconstructed in 1954. So, history teacher, having proven this in the room right now with photographs, how am I supposed to trust anything else in history? then you study Graham Hancock and you redate the pyramids back way back, and it just starts blowing up in your brain. Anyway, let me know what you think. If you haven't been to deepthoughtsradio.com, please go. It's all spruced up and amazing. It has a search field for one thing. It's got category lists, so you can go watch the videos that you like out of this variety show that is Deep Thoughts Radio. I think I'm up to like 470 some videos. We're at the number 443, but with special reports and other ancillary episodes, I think we're way up around 470. But there's two links for the video. Brighteon just updated, and they put us at a level 50, which allows us to have 50 videos. So I'm currently uploading at least 50 videos, and we'll see if we can't earn the other 400 or whatever the hell we need to get that going. We'll see. But BitChute is fantastic. Get yourself a BitChute account. It's Bitcoin-based, and so if you want to tip somebody, you can do it that way. I mean, it never happens, but it's a great freedom of speech area. And, of course, YouTube. There's plenty of audio links for your podcast devices. There's three social media. There's the Locked Facebook group, there's Twitter, and the competitor, Free Speech Zone, Minds.com. Please make a subscription over there because it's way prettier than Facebook. And man, wouldn't it be awesome to post anything and not have someone police your fucking posts? Seriously. There's a couple ways to donate to the show. There's PayPal and there's Patreon. If you do a Patreon account, what you get for that is you get the episodes the second I'm uploading them from my computer. And so sometimes you get 3 or 4 days access to the episodes before anyone else sees them, in case that turns you on. There's a couple of products I promote. Brave Browser, get it. Pokes the deep state's eye out. Change the Google search engine to DuckDuckGo. You should do that anyway in any of your browsers. But if you're using Chrome, they got a copy of everything that you do. If you use Safari, they got a copy of everything you do. So just get Brave. Knocks out all the ad trackers. Knocks out all the autoplay crap. You can't see any of your advertising. And it runs on all your mobile devices. It's beautiful. If you need a backup solution, $7 a month per computer, infinite storage, Backblaze.com. I use it. It has saved at least 3 shows that I accidentally deleted. I put out 2 new shirts for season 5. I will continue to put out other shirts. I did take down the, I believe it was a season 3 shirt. So if you guys got that, I think 3 of you bought that shirt on the first day. So you guys have a relic from season 3 and no one else can get it. Isn't that cool? So I'm going to be putting out, these are technically going to be season 5 shirts, but I am going to do one that's fully branded for Deep Thoughts without a UFO on it. At least if it has a UFO, it won't be the main focus of it. So go check that out. If you get on Patreon, there's a 20% discount coupon on there. Again, the goal of raising the money is just to be able to do this show more full-time and to do the research that it takes. Plus, believe it or not, some guests want money to appear on the show. And you might hate him for that, but time is money, and I fully respect that. So there's some people I'm not even talking to because I know they're going to want a little cash out. So it might facilitate that as well. So for those of you who do contribute, thank you so much. You're paying for the sticks. You're paying for all my labor, so I appreciate it. There's also a fully remastered Season 1. You will not find Season 1 episodes on this channel that are at least active in the feed. So go to the website. Everything's up there. Yeah, it looks like we're cool with YouTube. I don't think YouTube took down a single channel on the 10th. So I think that was all hyped up. But, you know, it's good to be cautious, I guess, in certain senses. We can talk about whatever we want because we don't go down those rabbit holes that are super dark, at least not that often. But anyway, thank you for joining the show. Take care of yourself and someone else, and I will see you in the next Deep Thoughts. Over now.